All right, you guys are in for a treat. Mike Farrell's Sports Talk Show is back. My name is Adam. I've got Mike with me again. Thanks for listening to us on the Believe Podcast Network. And thanks for subscribing on YouTube. If you haven't done that, do that by now. Mike is putting his ear into the camera, which is really disconcerting. I'm not sure what to do with this. Is there more I need to know about your ear being in my viewpoint, Mike?
I'm a disgusting human being. I have allergies, so I live in Connecticut. Been out and about. Allergies have been fine, but started getting a little cloggy in my ear. So I decided to attack my ear viciously last night with Q-tips. And I have impacted everything into my ear canal. So now I can't hear out of my left ear.
Yeah.
So all day today, I've been doing the hydrogen peroxide and the bulb blasting and just trying to break everything up, and nothing's worked. And it hurts. And I'm pretty gross and ticked off about it. So I'm going to be doing a lot of this.
Okay. The Q-tube is an interesting device. It hasn't really improved much in lifetime, right? It's been the same staple forever. There's been no advancements on the Q-tip. And I do believe I've heard this before, that sticking that in your ear is the worst thing you can do. There's some sort of like new fancy gadget, I think, that like sucks the wax out. I don't know if this is a NC-17 show, but sucks the wax right on out of the eardrum. So the Q-tip has definitely been something that's, you know, not as in favor these days as your screen goes black.
Yeah. Oh, you can hear me. You can see me now, though. Yeah. I just put in my ear, so you can hear me, right?
I can hear you, yeah.
That could be the problem, too. I blast so much music in my ears. But, yeah, the Q-tip, every doctor tells you don't put anything bigger than your elbow in your ear, right? That's the whole term. You never heard that?
I have not. No. Yeah. Well, you nor would I ever try to put my elbow in my ear. Yeah.
It's an old person's term. And so, you know, Q-tips are dangerous. You could puncture your eardrum. But in this case, what you could do is you could clean your ears out, which is a normal human being, right? Right. I mean, we all have ear wax. We all poop. We all pee. It's humans.
To confirm.
But you can also, I apparently move it around enough so that it clogs the entire auditory response of your ear. You know, so then what you do, this is the fun part, is you take a Q-tip and you put it in hydrogen peroxide, and then you pop it in your ear and you listen to it, and it crackles because it's killing everything in there. I've been doing that all day and it's still crackling. So that means there's a ton of stuff in there. So I'm hoping to wake up tomorrow and be a normal human being again, because I don't want to go to the doctor for this. Because what the doctor does, they've got two things. They get this big scoop that they put into your brainstem. And then the other thing is this drainage system, saline hydrogen.
It's like a water syringe of some sort they blast into your eardrum. Yeah.
But it hurts. It hurts a lot, and it's a pain in the ass, and it takes forever to get done. So this is why I'm in a bad mood. Just simply because of my physical incapabilities and disgusting nature of my human anatomy.
You know, when I thought about this show today, Mike, and I was scripting out what we might talk about, I didn't have this one on my board, but I was going to start with you, a personal affront. You had a little rant on Twitter talking about, you know, Florida and how excited you were for the big three this weekend, Mike. And some of my UCF brethren got into your mentions. I'm sure a few folks have gotten blocked already. Left UCF off that big three, Mike. I mean, what do we got to do? Miami beat Bethune. I mean, it isn't like they had a huge game. We beat South Carolina State, pretty close, same margin. I don't know.
I get it. So here's the thing. Like, I only block people if they're just obtusely rude. Like, if they tell me to die, or that I'm a piece of crap, or I'm a piece of garbage, or delete my account. UCF fans have been like funny about it. You know, one of them said, I may have to unfollow you, or, you know, oh my God, this is awful, or funny memes. I'm not going to block people for that. It's just the vitriol and anger of, you know, you're a piece of garbage, die, that type of stuff gets people blocked. Now, again, this goes back to my old age. This goes back to elbow in the ear. The big three is just what I call it. I didn't even think of UCF when I was talking about that. And we've talked about it. Jeez. Yeah, and we did an article earlier this summer about, you know, ranking the big four, and is there a big four, and I just forgot. I forgot UCF because big three to me is always Florida State, Miami, and Florida. And what's happening this week is all three of those fan bases are cocky. And it's been such a long time because Florida State fans, I forgot how angry and horrible they are as human beings because they've sucked so long. You know, this brings me back to when they were winning the national championship with Jameis and before that, you know, successful with Bowden. It's been so long that's been good. I forgot how bad they are. So they beat LSU last night, and they might as well have beaten Alabama and won a national championship because that's
did they beat LSU or did LSU beat themselves?
Well, we can get into that in a second. Yeah. And then Florida fans, you know, they were cocky about Utah coming in and we're going to show this team number seven in the country, and they did. They played physical football. Now again, did Utah beat themselves? I mean, should Cam Reiser throw an ill-advised slant, you know, inside the 10-yard line when a field goal will send it to overtime? It's another argument. And then Miami beat nobody and UCF beat nobody. But yeah, it's just the big three is just habitual. I'm sorry. Now UCF will go into the Big 12 and they'll be a Power 5 program. And maybe that will change the habit, but that's habitual. It's not a slight. It's I forgot you. Which is okay. The definition of a slight, actually.
It's absolutely a slight. If you just go ahead and apologize to UCF now, we'll get moving.
I'm sorry, UCF.
There we go. All right. Here we go. So you mentioned big games this weekend. We're just going to riff this thing. We're going to just go game by game. We'll get a couple in here. And Mike, probably the most impressive, you mentioned it, was the Gators. I got to give it to them. Utah coming in. Obviously, they were ranked number seven. Yeah. Coming into the Swamp, night game, humid, yeah. Muggy. I mean, Kyle Whittingham was sweating, I think, when he woke up this morning. That shirt he was wearing was not helping him at all. Billy Napier finally got rid of that stupid, you know, jacket he had on because there was no need for that. But Florida comes out with an impressive 29-26 victory. And if I sum this game up in two words, it's not hard to figure this one out. And those two words were Anthony Richardson. He was the difference in this game, Mike. I know you had him lower on your quarterback 50 board, and largely because you hadn't seen him do anything. Right. You saw him go 17 of 24 for 168 through the air. You saw him also rush for another 106 yards, three touchdowns. He moved up your board, I assume, based on this performance?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So a lot of people were angry that I had Will Levis so high because of his NFL skills and ability, and Anthony Richardson outside the top 25, who has, you know, even better – not an arm. He doesn't have a better arm than Levis, but he has, you know, better mobility, and he's a bigger, more physical player, harder to game plan against. But, you know, Will Levis had a season last year. He actually played a lot and put up okay numbers and was erratic. Anthony Richardson didn't play much. He had six touchdowns, five picks. So it would be irresponsible for me to put him that high. But now I would put him ahead of Will Levis for one game. But it's one game against Utah, a really good defensive program, a physical program. They could not figure him out. They were not going to game plan. We saw the game the whole time. I forget who the announcer was, but was talking about how maybe it was Orlovsky.
It was Orlovsky, yeah.
Yeah, who I'm not a big fan of, by the way.
Why?
He thinks he's so smart. I covered him as a recruit. Yeah, whatever. And his dad was an absolute nightmare, but I won't get into that. But he thinks he's smarter than the rest of the world. But he is a smart football guy. I mean, you know, everybody could say, oh, he's a 16-year backup and he ran out of the back of the end zone. That's what he's famous for. But you know what? He made a lot of money as a third string quarterback in the NFL. And guess who can't do that? Me. So I respect him as a football mind. And he was talking about Richardson going to pull it and could have at any time and probably walked into the end zone, and it didn't have to, but his zone read ability was excellent. Mm-hmm. He just looked great. Billy Napier is my spirit animal because I am that guy who wears a hoodie in the summer. And Billy Napier wants to play physical. He wants to run the football. He wants to make Florida a tougher team. And we've seen that already in game one. So all those idiotic, moronic fans that were calling Billy Napier out in June because his recruiting class wasn't great, they can shut up. They're all trolls. But the Florida trolls are out and they're all calling me an idiot because I didn't have Richardson high enough. And I picked Utah to win this football game. And listen, this is what college football is about. You know, Rising throws a touchdown pass, Florida loses, Utah covers. And Napier's 0-1 and he's facing some criticism. Okay. especially, you know, defensive side of the ball. How do you let somebody go down the field like that? Blah, blah, blah. Cam Rising is not Tom Brady. That's just how fans are. Now, he throws a bad interception, his tight end falls down, they win the game, and now Billy Napier is a god. So when I tweeted out that said Billy Napier, I'm not sure if he's a great fit for Florida, the reason I tweeted that a long time ago and the reasoning behind that is the fan base is so impatient that they were impatient with Dan Mullen, who went to the SEC title game in 2020, and they wanted him gone after six games in 2021. If Billy Napier falls on hard times, then, you know, they're going to want him gone too. But right now he's 1-0. He's the best coach to ever live since Urban Meyer, and Florida fans are happy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was not thinking Florida was going to, you know, win this one, but it got interesting late. I mean, I think that goal line stand the Gators had after, you know, Utah gets onto the one and that huge goal line stand, that was a momentum changer, in my opinion. I think Utah was starting to get methodical in the running game. You were seeing them gash them out of the third quarter. They were getting 5, 6, 7 yards. And, you know, Florida makes that stop on the goal line, and you just felt like a momentum swing from that standpoint. And it felt like whoever was calling the plays, if it was Billy Napier, if it was offensive coordinator, I don't really know, but whoever's calling the plays, seems like they just had the perfect play. And that perfect play typically was Anthony Richardson making some sort of a zone read and getting moving. I think that, to me, that was a turning point when Florida had that stop at the goal line.
And the funny thing about it was, you know, the end kept crashing. I thought that they were using sort of a little bit of a fake here. Okay, so let's keep the end off and run the zone read and hand it off every time. But the end was crashing. They were still successful with it, and he could have pulled it any time and scored. And I don't think he's great at the zone read yet, but he's getting better. I don't think he's a great passer yet, but he's getting better. He's a 6'4", 230-pound, insanely gifted athlete that is a combination of Cam Newton and Terrell Pryor physically. And that's a great combination because, you know, Cam Newton, obviously we know what he did. He wasn't a very accurate passer, but won a national championship, number one overall pick. Terrell Pryor could have won a national championship perhaps if he didn't get in trouble with Tattoo Gate and, you know, didn't pan out at a quarterback, but turned out to be a really good wide receiver in the NFL. And Richardson just has that level of athleticism. So that's what he reminds me of. If I'm game planning against them, I'm scared. It's not fun. That doesn't mean they're going to be better than Georgia. Georgia looked amazing, and we can segue into that. You know, but Kentucky, I had Kentucky number two. Some people had Tennessee number three. Those two teams should be worried.
Let's talk about that final drive. You mentioned Cam Rising. He has a huge run, a 29-yard run that sets him up first and 10 on the 19. Then they throw an inexplicable 4-yard pass. I don't know if that was the only safe read he had. I don't. That was interesting to me. They throw a 4-yarder, you know, then a 9-yarder, right? And then there's the goal line, you know, the goal line interception by Bernie. To me, Rising stared down that tight end the entire time. I mean, Bernie just really just sat in his zone, waited for a second, waited for a tick, saw the throw, and made a great play. Yeah, the tight end falls down. Even if he stands up, I still think Bernie gets a hand on that ball, maybe even intercepts it. And for all, you know, Cam Rising did well, I thought that last play was just ill-advised. I think they still had bullets in the gun, if you will, quote-unquote, on that one. I felt like that was just a tough play call right then and there. They still had time on the clock. That was a surprising decision. I haven't seen Rising play a ton. He had these moments where you're like, man, this kid's really good. But then he had a couple where you're like, man, he missed Vele on a really easy throw to the outside earlier in that quarter. Just seemed like there were pockets where he needed to make one play and he was off a little bit. And obviously it cost him in the end.
Yeah, he's not a great passer. I mean, you know, he's a good dual threat quarterback, good college level prospect. You know, he should have been picked by Ventrell Miller on that drive too.
Yes.
So yeah. He made a couple of mistakes. I thought they were going to go to Kuthi because he was just unstoppable the whole time. They sort of used him as a decoy down there. But yeah, I mean, it's not a great play to call an inside slant. I mean, Pete Carroll will tell you that till the day he dies, probably, I would hope. And it's just not ideal. But, you know, listen, hindsight's 2020, Florida. You know, they had numerous opportunities defensively to make stops and plays on that last drive. They did it, and they get out of here with a victory. So Cam Rising also has either the smallest head or the biggest helmet I've ever seen. Did you see my Spaceballs tweet? Genius.
I did.
Yeah. Genius. I mean, I kept figuring, I'm like, what is wrong with this? What does this guy look like? Who does he look like? What's going on here? And it was Rick Moranis without the mustache. He's an okay quarterback, but he's not there to win football games. You're not a Utah team that's supposed to be down and having to drive, you know, with under 2 minutes. You're supposed to control the football game, outpunch everybody, be more physical and have the lead and run the clock. And they weren't able to do that.
Let's stay in the state of Florida. The game Sunday night, Seminoles versus LSU Tigers. Mike, I'm going to give you only 3 words. You get 3 words to describe this game to the audience. You can only pick 3. What are the 3 words? It could be a sentence. It could be 3 individual words. You get 3 words to describe this thing on Sunday night.
I'll go 3 individual words. Amazing, epic, lucky. Those are
interesting.
And lucky is both ends. It's not Florida State being lucky that they blocked the extra point. It's LSU being lucky that they were even in this game, having muffed two punts. You know, the fact that Florida State fumbled going in, the fact that, you know, Greg McElroy, who's very smart and was correct, was like, let him score. It's just I guess that could be a word, unfathomable, the way this played out, because, you know, they muffed the second punt. You know, let them score, go down 2 touchdowns, then hopefully you score an onside kick, blah, blah, blah. They don't do that, and Florida State decides to run a pitch play on the 1-yard line, which is similar to a slant. at Utah, just dumb. And then, you know, LSU goes down the field and you know, without their best player really being in the game. I mean, Kayshon Booty, his head was elsewhere. He dropped 2 passes. He was not an impact guy whatsoever. And they go down there and score. And then they get the extra point blocked. Just, I don't think we're going to see a better football game than that. And we always say this out of week 1. There's always one game that's amazing that we always say that about. But, I mean, the fact that this game was even coming down to the wire, you know, Florida State fans will tell you they outplayed LSU. I will argue that they were gifted a lot of opportunities as well. I thought Florida State's offense played well. Quarterback development is there. The running backs are solid. You know, they had question marks at wide receiver. You know, Johnny Wilson is supposed to be a soft West Coast kid, and he's not. He's a monster that can't be stopped in many ways. Defense played well. Florida State deserved this victory, but they were also, you know, gifted so many personal fouls. You know, they were gifted Mason Smith with a completely fluky knee injury early in the game. Yep. They were gifted, you know, 2 fumbled punts and a blocked extra point. They got a lot of gifts in this one. So here's what it looks like. And I tweeted this out. And of course, Florida State fans think I was taking a shot at them. I wasn't. If LSU kicks that extra point and wins this in overtime, Mike Norvell is in huge trouble. Huge trouble. That fan base is ready to string him up because they had the lead, because it was insurmountable after that second punt return fumble. The fact that they fumble that away, you know, when you could have kicked a field goal and put it out of reach, and then lost that game, he would be in big, big trouble. Instead, because they blocked an extra point, he's 2-0, and Florida State's back, and they're going to win the national championship.
Was Brian Kelly talking to anybody on that headset?
So this is a different Brian Kelly.
It seemed like that was a lot of the social media stuff was that no one had seen Brian Kelly actually speak into the headset all evening.
Well, and also Brian Kelly is not now again at Cincinnati. He was a raving lunatic. At Notre Dame, he was a raving lunatic. And Notre Dame fans said, well, when he arrived here, he was behaved. He's never been behaved. He's always been the red-faced tomato who's screaming at everybody about everything, everything. So many things occurred in that football game where Brian Kelly was just like, whatever. I was like, this dude is cashed out, and he's got a long-term contract at LSU, but all of it's guaranteed money. I think that this could be a disaster, and it's from one game and body language. But he didn't seem to care because LSU honestly did a lot of dumb things, a lot of dumb things. And there were some calls that went against them that maybe shouldn't have. And Brian Kelly just was like, whatever, man, just go out there, Jaden, and do your thing. It's all good. It was the different Brian Kelly than I'm used to seeing.
I know the answer to this question is actually no, but I'll ask just to be funny. Brian Polian, the special teams coordinator, obviously previously head coach at Nevada, spent some time at Notre Dame. Is he fired? Does he have a job tomorrow, Mike? Obviously, special teams was not the strong suit for LSU. That punt, I think you or I could have blocked that field goal just based on the way sort of the left end let that guy through on Florida State. And is Brian Polian employed tomorrow?
Yeah, he is. And he's been around forever. You know, I mean, he's a good guy, a good coach. Obviously has good bloodlines, you know.
Bill, yep, his father Bill. Yeah,
did pretty good. And he's been around Brian Kelly for a very long time. So, you know, this isn't Brian Kelly going to say, oh, you're gone. This is a guy who does also a tremendous job recruiting. But, yeah, I mean, okay. So two muffed fair catch punts. I don't know if you can blame that on the coach. I mean, that's just lack of concentration from a kid who was clearly nervous. The extra point, just awful. But in the whole scheme of things, I mean, there were a couple really bad punts. I mean, special teams was horrendous. And without those special teams issues, I believe, you know, Florida State fans say, well, you know, we should have beat them by 10. LSU should have won this football game by 10. You know, without these constant mistakes and without, you know, Allie Gay deciding that he wanted to destroy. I mean, that was, I don't like targeting, but that should have been three targets.
Right. When they actually like show targeting clips to referees in the offseason, that should be the video they show. That is targeting. Some of the other nonsense they show, it to your point, is absolutely a waste of our times. That is the clinical definition of what targeting is.
Defenseless crown launch.
Yes. The excessive. It was clearly excessive
the
too, right?
DCL of targeting. It's so many mistakes. And you know, again, I keep talking about Mason Smith. He's a big part of their defense. I mean, this is a guy who was at one point the number one player in the country coming out of high school, just supposed to be the breakout star of the year. And he's jogging to celebrate a tackle with a teammate, and his knee just explodes. I'm like, this is just all bad luck. Polian's got a job. LSU looked awful in so many facets of the game. And I even tweeted it as such, because when something becomes so objectionable to my eyes, I have to hit Twitter. I have to say something. It was just a really horrible, horrible performance from, you know, not targeting Boutte early, to his emotional breakdowns on the sidelines, to, you know, dropping two passes and Jaden Daniels trying to talk him down, to Brian Kelly not seeming to care, to special teams issues, to bad penalties. Offensive line play was bad. Everything about this was bad, and they still almost won the game. So if you're Florida State, this is great. You're 2-0, you're back. I love it. You didn't beat Alabama. You beat a bad LSU team, and I think we're going to see that we've got a bad LSU team on our hands. And we kind of knew this. I mean, Brian Kelly wasn't inheriting the 2019 Joe Burrow team. You know, he's inheriting the 2021 team that wasn't very good. He lost a lot of guys to the portal, and he brought a ton. I mean, he was one of the most active guys in the portal. So a lot of these are new players, and, you know, they're just – they got a lot of problems, though.
You mentioned Kayshon Boutte after the game. He scrubbed anything LSU-related from his social media. I saw a tweet earlier tonight saying that was just done because rabid fans are going to come after him and yell and scream, yada, yada, yada. In today's day and age of, you know, emotional intelligence isn't always the strongest in these kids, obviously, and at some point, you know, the transfer portal is an issue. Do you have anything to report for us, any information on what you think Kayshon Boutte may be doing next? Emotional response, or do you think there's something more here?
Well, okay, so here's the background with Kayshon Boutte is that he wanted to transfer numerous times from LSU, and every time he was talked down, and there were some NIL deals put in place to keep him there. But, you know, he wanted to leave a few times. You know, this is a guy who was recruited by Ed Orgeron, and he lost his coach. You know, this is a guy who had quarterback issues last year before he got hurt. And, you know, he played great as a true freshman and he was great before he got injured, but he wasn't enamored with everything that was going on at LSU. So when I was at the, you know, watching the game, I was like, okay, I knew coming in that he was a bit of a diva and a little bit of a hothead. And so when he wasn't targeted and he had zero catches at the half, I'm like, we could really see something. We got to watch here. Just knowing people who know him and know the personality and how emotional he is and how, you know, he's a great player and great players want the football, but he's also a bit of a diva. I'm like, he could leave. He might not come out for the half, or he could just leave and, you know, head to the portal. But the portal makes no sense because he would have to sit out a year. So he's not going to the portal. He'll be fine. He'll be on the LSU roster. They're playing, what, Southern or something. He'll probably get 20 catches for 500 yards just to keep him happy. But it's not a good look from the NFL's perspective. He's fast. He's got okay size, and he's got great hands, and he's dynamic. But it's not a great look for the NFL. But I will tell this in his defense, you know, every year fans become more and more emboldened. Fans become very, very outrageously, overly upset about everything. And they have no repercussions to what they say. So you can go on social media and you can tell him to kill himself or die, or whatever you want to say, and there's really no repercussions. You can report them to the social media people and they can, you know, delete those people's accounts, but there's no way to keep up with it all. I got death threats on social media. I tried to pursue it from a criminal aspect just once, just to see what would happen. And I knew the person's name, I knew their address, I knew who they were, I knew their parents, I knew everybody. I had all the information and I was told, you can't do anything. Because it's social media. If we locked everybody up who, you know, made a death threat, then we wouldn't have any humans left. But my thing was like, don't lock him up, but just go to his, and he's a little punk kid, go to his family, have the cops show up, knock on the door and say, this kid threatened to kill somebody. Nope, they wouldn't even do that. So, you know, blacking out your social media isn't going to do anything. That's stupid. That just says you don't want to be part of LSU and you're not proud of being an LSU Tiger. And I get, you know, if you're getting that vitriol, you're not going to be. What you need to do is just, you know, get off social media. But you can't in the NIL world. You can't in the world we live in. So I just think you should have done nothing. I think you should have just left it be. But there were other players that did this as well. And from what I understand, the amount of hatred towards some of the players at LSU was over the top.
All right, let's get to a couple of fun games, then we'll get to some of the bigger ones. Here's a sneaky fun game, I thought, in the afternoon window. Arkansas 31, Cincinnati 24. I thought that was actually a really fun game to watch, a really interesting game to watch. KJ Jefferson from Arkansas played really well. This was kind of a new-look Cincinnati team, a new quarterback, new offensive coordinator, a lot of new parts on defense. And Arkansas was pretty much in control the entire game. Cincinnati made their runs here and there, and you felt like they maybe could break back into it. What did you take more from this game? Arkansas is good. Cincinnati isn't as good. A little bit of both. What did you take away from this game? Again, a 31-24 Arkansas win.
I think they're both good teams. I mean, Cincinnati, I believe, lost 12 players to the NFL. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. That's like Alabama level. Okay. You know, not all first rounders like Alabama or whatever, but that's a lot of depth off of your team. Luke Fickell's a good coach. They've got talent on this team. It's not as much talent as last year, and they're not going to make the playoff, but they're a really good program and they're in good shape heading into the Big 12. Arkansas needed to hold serve here. This was important. 9 wins last year, you know, 6.5-point favorites at home against a top 25 team. Out of conference is not an easy way to start your football season, and they did a good job. You know, they're physical, they can run the ball. KJ Jefferson can run the ball, so he's a dual threat, hard to defend. Defense is solid. My takeaway is Cincinnati is a good football team that will challenge in the AAC, and Arkansas is handling the pressure appropriately. In the SEC West, you can go from 9 wins to 7 to 6 to 4 real fast. And you can go from 9 to 5, you know, real fast. And it doesn't look like they're going to be that team. So I like Sam Pittman. He's fun to root for. He's a fat guy like me. He's an everyman, you know, always been a nice guy. You want guys like that to win. So I thought it was pretty cool for him to do what he's done. You know, that 2020 schedule was such an unbelievable, ridiculous, you know, slap in the face to Arkansas, the all SEC schedule. 2021 schedule was bad too. So for him to go, you know, to this season coming off a 9-1 year is very, very amazing. And I retweeted my top five hires, you know, since Kirby Smart, because Kirby Smart, that's unfair to put him in there. He's the best hire over the last many years. And he's number one. And people still argue it. You know, Mel Tucker's up there and Lane Kiffin's up there and there's some others. And Fickell isn't in there and he probably should be. But Sam Pittman, the job he's done in Arkansas is better than any job you're going to say since Matt Rhule went to Baylor when they were a mess. Those are the two best coaching jobs in the last decade.
Yeah, Cincinnati gave them all they could handle, and Arkansas responded every time, you know, kind of held them out. So that was, I think, a nice win by Arkansas. Under the category of what am I seeing here, North Carolina 63, App State 61. It includes a 40-point fourth quarter by App State. And includes one of the worst onside kicks I've ever seen. The entire line got blown up. Then one of the worst returns I've ever seen, because while there was green grass in front of you, fall down, you win the game. Again, you get three adjectives to describe this one, Mike. What are the three adjectives to describe Carolina's 63-61 escape from App State?
Fun is one. Yeah. Embarrassing sure. is the other. And horrific would be the third. Because the defenses were just terrific. I mean, Gene Chizik was brought in, you know, to rekindle the old days of Texas with Mac Brown and fix this defense, which wasn't very good last year. And they were a disappointment overall, offensively and defensively last year. They're bad. And we saw that against Florida A&M, that they're bad. You know, Florida A&M put up 24 points against this team, and then they just got destroyed by Jackson State and couldn't do anything. And now we see App State, which is a good football team, good running backs, Chase Bryce, solid quarterback. But, you know, to put up 60-plus points and to win on a defended, you know, two-point attempt. And, you know, had this gone to overtime, I don't believe either team would have stopped the other. So I think it could have been 101 to 100 eventually. Well, two-point conversion, 102 to 100. Just embarrassing, awful. UNC's 2-0. That's great, but this defense is so bad, and there's talent there. This is not talent. This is a scheme issue that's just – and, yeah, Tony Grimes being hurt and other – just it's something's wrong, and they better fix it quick. The best news for UNC fans is they can't get worse. Mm.
Another fun game. I think I called this on one of our shows recently. Houston 37 – and UTSA 35, a fun and entertaining game. I know Houston is, a lot of folks consider them the favorite in the AAC. They have a pretty soft schedule this year. I think you were pretty high on them. Clayton Tune coming back. The Roadrunners, Meep, gave them all they could handle, and it was a really great overtime battle. Houston comes out on top. What did you make of this one? Again, what's your takeaway from Houston squeaking away run from UTSA?
Yeah, so I do that that gambling show for betting pros on Saturday mornings with Thor Nystrom.
Plug. There's a fun plug right there.
A little plug, but also plug. I'm doing pretty well, and I'm not usually good at gambling. So in this one, I said take the over, which isn't, you know, by any means genius, but you got Frank Harris, but the over, it was a high number. So, you know, but you got Frank Harris, Clayton Tune, you got two really good offenses and two defenses that are here and there, lost some things. This was a fun game because these are players that you're not going to hear a lot about throughout the season. Clayton Tune is my group of five pick to be the guy that the NFL starts to fall in love with. And Frank Harris is one of the most entertaining, most fun football players you're going to see. And, you know, they're replacing Sincere McCormick, so their offense is a little bit different now. But fun game. Really, really good game. Houston was that team. I had a list of teams you should be scared poopless of. It hasn't panned out that well. Utah was my number one. I forget. NC State was up there, and they looked like garbage. But Houston was on there, and I'm proud of that because they're going to be a good football team. I mean, you know, Dana Holgorsen redshirted like the entire team 3 years ago. And it's paying off now. They got a lot of experience, and they're going to be difficult to deal with.
What do you take from, I mean, we'll get to the last couple of games here in a second. What do you take of week one? What should fans make of their team week one, right? You really don't know what to expect. You get some of these odd matchups. You know, some games are closer than they should be. Some games are blowouts. What's your overall impression of teams sort of week one as a fan base kind of moving out of that? Should you ride high with optimism, always be skeptical? What's your overall thoughts on a week one?
This year, you know nothing. We know nothing. You know, we saw as early as Thursday, you know, West Virginia blow a game against Pitt, and we saw Sean Clifford lead a fourth quarter comeback. You know, the former will probably happen more as Neil Brown outthinks himself. And if Sean Clifford leads another fourth quarter comeback this season, I'd be stunned and I would fall over. You know, Oregon got destroyed by Georgia. They're not as bad as they looked. Georgia's not as good as they look. Georgia's really good, but not as good as that. And then you got Miami, Florida State, as I mentioned, you know, Texas, USC, both playing really, really bad football teams, and, you know, Oklahoma as well. You don't know what you have yet. You really don't. The only places you really know what you have, you know what you have at Iowa. Mm-hmm. You've got nepotism. And just
got a 1.25 QBR.
The worst offense you're ever going to see. And mm-hmm. you've got Kirk Ferentz, who's having hallucinations on the sidelines because he said he saw a lot of good things offensively. So you know what you have at Iowa. That's nothing new. You know what you have at Wisconsin with the power running. You know what you have in a lot of different circumstances. But when it comes to the big teams, yeah, we know Alabama's great. Ohio State struggled a little bit. I think this is going to be good for them in the long run. And we know there's a huge, huge drop off after the big three top teams because, you know, Clemson's probably the fourth team, and we'll see how they do tonight against Georgia Tech. But I have a feeling Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia are the three teams that are going to distance themselves from the rest of the country.
And update to a previous story, Nebraska and North Dakota were a touchdown away at the end of the third quarter, Mike. It was 24-17, end of the third quarter. North Dakota ended up losing that game. Nebraska wins that one. Scott Frost survives another day. All right, let's get down to the two big games. I think the games folks had circled. One was pretty much over very early, Georgia 49, Oregon 3. The Ducks just couldn't get anything going offensively. Georgia just gave them all they could handle. I think, and I haven't watched every one of his games ostensibly, Mike, but I think this is the best Stetson Bennett's looked. I mean, 368 mm-hmm. yards passing, two touchdowns, only six, you know, incomplete passes all day long. He was rolling. The Dogs were rolling. Obviously, they lost a lot on defense, but Oregon just couldn't get it moving, and Georgia steamrolls them. You would thought that would happen. Did you think it'd be as bad as it turned out mm-hmm. being?
No. So the line itself, you know, was up to 17.5 at one point. And again, having been a degenerate gambler for years and years and years, the understanding is if the line's too good to be true, then don't bet against it. I mean, someone in Vegas knew. I thought that line should have been closer to 12, maybe 11. When I saw it that high, I was like, okay, I'm laying everything I got on Georgia because somebody knows something. But the opposite can hold true in the Ohio State game. So I figured Georgia would win. I said to parlay that with the under, and the under just barely came in. It was 55, and it was 49-3, you know, honestly, what, in the third quarter? And I'm like, oh, geez, Georgia's going to kill the under here by themselves. I thought the familiarity with Dan Lanning would keep them within three scores, but this was just an absolute rout. This was destruction in every category. And Georgia, like I said, isn't as good as this. They're really good. Stetson Bennett looked awesome. He's got a confidence level that he didn't have before winning the national title. So much talent on the roster. And Oregon's not this bad either. So take away from that game that Georgia is a playoff contender for sure. And that Oregon will rebound and be a factor in the North in the Pac-12.
What are we doing with Bo Nix? It didn't work, you know, swimmingly at Auburn. 21 to 37, two INTs, no touchdown passes. Is he going to have this job all year?
We didn't see Ty Thompson at all, which is very surprising. And Kenny Dillingham's one of the coolest, funnest people in college football. And And they showed that one offensive coordinator cam of him where Bo threw a typical Bo horrible pass for an interception, and Kenny Dillingham's going, no, oh, you know, and he kind of knows what he has here. But the fact that we didn't see Ty Thompson confuses me a little bit. I thought this would be a great opportunity for him to get some reps. We won't see Bo Nix the whole season, I don't think. I think he's better than this. But again, Bo tries to do too much. Bo is, I think, used to the offensive line at Auburn because he's got a clock in his head that says, you know, one read and just scramble and run around when you really don't have to sometimes. And he's got a pretty good offensive line there. He's just rushing everything. He's not slowed down. He's not matured as a quarterback. And I know Dillingham likes him, but I also know Ty Thompson is a potential Anthony Richardson type of talent. And oh, he's got to get on the field soon. Not as athletic, but big, okay, strong, difficult to game plan for. And I think he's got to get on the field.
All right, the marquee game of the evening, Notre Dame, Ohio State. You were one that thought this would be pretty much a one-sided affair. Mm-hmm. The Buckeyes 21, Notre Dame 10. This was still close, Mike, going in the fourth quarter, though, at that point, right? It was still 17-10, at that point. Ohio State puts on a late touchdown to obviously take the victory. How did that happen? Is Notre Dame better than you thought, or was Ohio State's offense specifically – obviously, Jackson Smith and Jigba went out for a period of time. He was kind of in and out throughout the game. They're the top receiver. Notre Dame's defense better than you thought, or Ohio State's offense not as good as you thought?
I think Notre Dame's better than I thought they would be. Marcus Freeman, you know, is a defensive coach. He's got these guys playing hard. They're playing physical. You know, they came in with a chip on their shoulder being 17-point underdogs. Jackson Smith and Jigba going out changed the entire approach for Ohio State offensively. And the reason is this: CJ Stroud is still developing as a quarterback, but he's a lock-on guy. And by that, I mean, he locks on who he wants to throw to. And Jackson Smith and Jigba, as we saw in the Rose Bowl, is the guy he wants to throw to. So when he's out, then Stroud has to become more of a field surveyor. And it takes him time to get into that. You know, he hit, you know, Marvin Harrison and Emeka Egbuka and some other guys, you know, here and there. And he got better as the game wore on. But Notre Dame played a really good football game. You know, they were in this game. I like Al Golden. Al Golden doesn't like me, I don't think. As this goes back 25 years, maybe he likes me now. I don't know. But
let's get him on the line. Al Golden, welcome to the show.
I wish. But I just don't understand the double safety blitz on 3rd and 11. I will never understand that. I can't even imagine writing that on a piece of paper, and I can't even imagine sending that call in. Double safety, delayed double safety blitz, by the way, allowed them to go over the top of single coverage and score that touchdown that gave them the lead. And then Notre Dame's not a team that I think that's going to be able to play a lot from behind, even if it is 4 points, because Buckner's new. He's getting used to the system. They don't have dynamic playmakers. They're used to, like, field position. I think that's what they're going to be this year and play hard defense. So it's just unfathomable that call was made. But up until that point, a really, really good defensive game plan, a good Notre Dame team, not fifth in the country. But if Ohio State's two, I guess you could make that argument. But I think Ohio State's going to get better from this. I think this is perfect for them. They leaned on their backup running back. They've got an embarrassment of riches there. They leaned on their offensive line. The defense was running around. They got pressure from the front four. And C.J. Stroud had to look at other receivers. So when Smith and Jigba comes back, he's going to have this embarrassment of riches that he's used to. And he's going to spread the ball around more. And their offense is going to be really, really dangerous, more so than if they came out and blasted Notre Dame 50-10. I think this is a teachable moment, as they call it, for Ryan Day. And this is perfect for Ohio State. They are not going to lose another football game in the regular season this year. And that defense, that offense is going to get just much better.
For Notre Dame, is this the best loss of the weekend?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at, they're the only top 10 team to lose, right? I think.
Yeah. Oregon was 11, but yeah.
And they lost in respectable fashion. And they hung in there, and there were some positive signs to take away. I think they're going to build on this as well. Now, you know, I don't think they're going to be playoff contenders. I don't think they're a top five football team. But yeah, that's a good loss, because you're 17 point underdogs going into Columbus. You keep it close, and it's a one score game for the most part. You can't ask for much more than that.
All right, we did not rehearse this, Mike, so I'm putting you on the spot here. Outside of the games we've mentioned, what else is the game of the week? What's the under the radar game that you feel like was just a surprising result, game of the week, something that really kind of caught your eye?
NC State.
Yeah.
I mean, that was disappointing. I knew they, you know, they're replacing running backs, they're replacing wide receivers, but their offensive line was good, and Devin Leary is good. Their defense is supposed to be really good. You know, they've got parts back they didn't have last year, and they've always got a good defensive line. They got good linebackers. They just didn't look good. ECU is a tough team. It was on the road. They can run the ball.
Yep.
They're, you know, I mean, their quarterback is 58 years old. He's been around for 25 years. He's not going to make a lot of mistakes, but he's also not going to beat you. But the fact that it came down to a missed extra point and a missed field goal, yeesh, your season could have been out the window right there, because everybody talks about how the Pac-12's done. You know, Utah lost, Oregon lost. They're not going to recover from this and get into the playoff. NC State loses that game. You know, they got to run the table. There are no losses, and then it includes Clemson. You know, the other one that struck me in the ACC was Louisville. How bad
are you? Syracuse, 31-7. That was my next go. That was my next go, yeah.
They're so bad. I mean, I expected it to be pretty good. Malik Cunningham, Tyne Evans coming over from Tennessee. You know, I expected them to be an okay football team. And all the momentum that Scott Satterfield got off the field, you know, from the transfer portal, from recruiting, you know, Reuben Owens, five-star running back, Texas. They got, you know, Clarkson's kid at quarterback. They're doing well in Florida. Recruit, all that is just shot to hell with a loss to Syracuse, a blowout loss to Syracuse. Every bit of momentum and excitement around that football office just thrown out the window in one game. And it's sad. I don't know if he survives this season, because if that's the product they're putting on the field, he's not going to.
You know who Louisville has next?
Nope.
UCF Friday night. See, in Orlando.
You should know this as a college football expert. So I just did a Twitter space, right? And people were ragging on me. One of the things was Eric Gilbert. I made a comment about how Eric Gilbert's fallen from, you know, superstar freshman at LSU to four-string tight end at Georgia. And, you know, one of his mentors and coaches came on, Terrence Edwards from Georgia, and he blasted me for the negativity of the post, the tweet. And my point to him was, this was not about mental health. This was not about Eric Gilbert's, you know, off-field issues. This was about what happened to a guy who was on top of the world to now a guy who is the fourth tight end on a football team. And he said, well, you should know. There was an article about it in January. He arrived at 300 pounds. He's still having mental health issues. And I said, well, listen, all I saw was the guy in spring game who looked great. And I'm expecting the guy to look great. You know, I had him like top five in my tight ends in the country based on what I saw. But my point is this. I should know Louisville and UCF are playing. I haven't really looked at next week's schedule that in depth. Every national college football expert out there, everyone, and I love some of them, and I think some suck. They don't know what the hell they're talking about 90% of the time. And I'm one of them. So when I talk about UCF, it's from a 10,000 foot view and a little bit diving in, you know, from my experience with these kids as recruits, some from my experience as a transfer portal, some stuff that I've read, some stuff that I've seen. But anybody out there who claims that they're going to watch 12 games of every Division I football team and know what they're talking about is lying. And I think really people need to understand that if you're coming to this podcast, which a lot of people don't yet, I'm trying to build it up a little bit with my stark honesty, with my earwax issues and the fact that I'm telling you and I don't really know everything. you really need to take away from this that you can get angry at people. You can get angry at takes. You can get angry at Kirk Herbstreit talking about the Tennessee and name, image, likeness stuff. You can get angry at Desmond Howard picking four playoff teams that probably won't make the playoff. You got to understand, these guys know football, and they know Notre Dame and Ohio State, and they know Georgia and Oregon because they dive deep into that. Kirk Herbstreit doesn't know anything about name, image, likeness. He doesn't know anything about the Tennessee quarterback who's supposed to be getting $8 million. The kid's not getting $8 million. And people don't really know a lot about what they're talking about. So my explanation about Eric Gilbert was, I don't know. And my argument was this. He said, well, you shouldn't talk about players if you don't know their story. I said, okay. So let's say I talked about Kayshon Boutte and his performance. And let's say it comes out tomorrow that Kayshon Boutte's nephew died tragically or something. I'm talking about the on-field performance. I'm not talking about what happened off-field or anything like that. Let's say I was talking about Spencer Rattler last year losing his job at Oklahoma. Well, did you know, and I'm making this up, of course, I don't know if this is true or not true, whatever. It's just made up. You know, did you know his dog died? No, I don't. I feel bad, but I can't take into account everybody's off-field issues, mental health or otherwise, when I'm analyzing the fact that the fact is that Eric Gilbert was the fourth tight end on the field for Georgia. Now, I'm not attacking him. I'm not even disparaging him in any way, shape, or form. It's a comment. But I got off on this riff because you mentioned who's Louisville playing at UCF. I don't know. Now I know, and I will by Thursday, but the fact that people think we're experts in everything, I'm trying to cover high school football, college football, the transfer portal, NIL, and the NFL draft. I'm going to do about 5% of that properly.
UCF minus 6.5 early line, by the way, Mike, if you want to lock that in. All right, who is?
It's at UCF?
It is, yeah.
I would take that before it gets up to 7. Okay, go ahead.
John Rush, probably 300 yards passing. Who knew that was going to happen? Who was your player of the week? If you have to give the player of the week mantle to one person this week, one performance that you thought was great, who's your player of the week?
That's a good question.
I may ask this every week, by the way, so if you want to just program this.
I never research anything. I never prepare for anything. You know this is how I work. I have no idea what you're going to ask. I don't have any preparation whatsoever for anything. If I don't know the answer, I'm just going to make it up. But this, I have to think about. And I'm going to say Anthony Richardson.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking about the big games that matter, the important games. You know, I'm going back to the Pitt West Virginia game, which I think matters. Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, and Georgia. And then some of the Cincinnati or Arkansas. Some of the games that matter. And then I'm thinking about, Bryce Young against Utah State. And, the games that don't matter. The Utah-Florida game mattered, and it mattered quite a bit. It mattered to the Pac-12. It mattered to the playoff outlook. It mattered to Billy Napier in Florida. And that guy just couldn't be stopped. And he's a really, really likable person. He's a likable person. I feel bad for him because he was nicknamed AR-15, right? Because that's his number and his initials. Yeah. And he had to back off that nickname that he wasn't even giving himself because of the stupid society we live in and mass shootings and all these, lunatics with guns. This is just a good kid. Now, I will say that same exact thing I said about Deshaun Watson. So this is based on what I know and experiences in talking to people. This is a really good kid. This is a kid who works hard, wants to get better, and has a chance, Bryce Young aside, CJ Stroud aside, to be the number one pick in the NFL draft without a doubt because his physical skills, I was trying to think of who he reminds me of in the NFL today, and I couldn't really think of anybody.
I saw a lot of Cam Newton.
Yeah, and he's not in the NFL today, right? I mean, I don't think. He sucks.
No, I'm sure he'll be on the practice squad soon. Yeah.
So, Cam Newton, Terrell Pryor came to mind as far as guys that are just freaky physical specimens and great athletes. Josh Allen comes to mind because of his ability to run the football. But he's a better passer than Richardson is. And I think Richardson's a better athlete. So I couldn't think of anybody to compare him to, which is crazy. So then I went to guys that aren't in college, NFL anymore. and Cam Newton came up in my head. But in the history of the NFL, the world of Anthony Richardson, you know, the Randall Cunninghams of the world are rare. And this kid's an unbelievably rare talent, so I'm picking him.
All right, last one for you. Who's the player, coach, team, whatever, that you're most concerned about after week one?
That's a good one.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
For those watching on YouTube, Mike's thinking.
Yeah, I want
for those listening. Mike's thinking.
Like, I want to say Mac Brown. You know, the layup answer. You know, they're 2-0, but their defense is horrible. We already talked about them, so I don't really want to go that deep into them. I'm trying to think of teams that just, you know, NC State. We've already talked about. I'm trying to think of teams we haven't talked about that really kind of struggled, that have weaknesses that I think are really going to come back to bite them.
Boise State lost to Oregon State. That was a bit of a eyebrow raiser.
I picked that one. Come on. Are you kidding me? Corvallis, man, they were undefeated at home last year. That place was rocking. I knew they would win. No, I think it's probably, you know, one of those two teams, UNC or NC State. Louisville, of course, was a disaster, as we talked about. But I want to think of a team that's like a real preseason contender.
Texas A&M, 31-0 over Sam. Only 31 against Sam.
Yeah, and Haynes came through two picks. They didn't look that good. But again, it's really hard to evaluate them or anybody against real crap football teams. So I'm thinking, you know, Big 12, I'm okay with what I saw there. I mean, maybe Oklahoma State. How about Oklahoma State? Not concerned for Gundy, but I'm concerned for that defense. I mean, Jim Knowles is gone. They gave up a billion points to a horrible football team. Spencer Sanders had to put on a Superman cape to actually win that game. And this is a team that, along with Baylor and Oklahoma, are preseason favorites to win that conference. And they looked horrible. So why don't I go Oklahoma State?
How about the Fighting Jeff Scotts, the USF Bulls, which actually is not in South Florida? They were down 28-0 at the end of the first quarter against BYU.
Man, I'm so stupid. I actually, this one I lost. I mean, I took them to cover against BYU. I think there was 13 points or something like that, and they got destroyed. I thought Jerry Bohannon would make a little bit of a difference. I thought Scott would be a good fit down there because he's, you know, he recruited that area for Clemson, and there's a lot of talent down there, but they're a nightmare. They're horrible. You know, they've got some good coaches. It's just I don't think the roster personnel has been put together for success. And you know, BYU is not a bad football team. You know, Jalen Hall is a very good football player. But USF, this just isn't working, unfortunately. And I like Jeff Scott as a human being. But it's pretty clear that it's not working.
Well, what is working, Mike, is this show is just taking off by the dozens each and every week.
The
Mike Farrell Sports website is taking off, MikeFarrellSports.com. Now powered by some heavy hitters. Mike, tell us more about what's going on at the website.
Starting to take off a little bit. SEO is tough. Yes. Search engine optimization is tough. Anybody who runs a website knows it's a grind. Google has to get used to you and has to know who you are, and it takes months and months for them to figure it out. And we're starting to see a little bit of an uptick with the move to the Arena Group and Sports Illustrated. So that's a slow crawl grind, but content's up like crazy. And we're putting up like 7-8 stories a day. And eventually people will catch on. You know, the sponsorships are coming in, which is nice because it wasn't at first. You know, the Booster Athletes app is one that I think players should download for sure. If you're a football player and you want even $1 from your fan base, that's it. Get this app, you know, put up a little dance or whatever, and you get at least a buck. But if you put up real content, I mean, listen, Kayshawn Boutte has, you know, the Booster Athletes app, like Devin Arcane has it, Dylan Gabriel has it, Devin Leary has it. There's a few others that have it already. And he puts up something today that nobody else has, you know, and in support of LSU, because LSU fans aren't going to, like, he puts it out, so I'm in the portal, they're all going to flood him with more hatred. But if he puts it out there, says, you know, go Tigers, ride with me, blah, blah, whatever.
Go Tigers.
He's going to get some, you know, he's going to get some NIL money from some supporters and fans of his. And that offsets the negativity, because all of these morons that are telling me to go die and kill myself are all miserable, horrible human beings who have no level of success in their life and live for one stupid thing, and it's college football, and live and die with their football team because they're, you know, probably simpletons. And I'm talking about the 5% of the fan base that is horrible. And that's the 5% that led him to scrub his social media and sort of, you know, retreat into darkness. It's the 95%, man, that will support you till the day you die as an LSU Tiger. So, Kayshon Boutte, if you're out there, if you're one of the 125 people that are going to listen to this, or maybe 1,000, I don't know, get that Booster Athletes app, get on there, put out a video, let us know what you're doing, and you know, you get some NIL money.
Go Tigers.
All right. We appreciate the 95% of you who are listening to, again, if you're listening on a podcast, Players Believe Network, make sure you subscribe. This will pop in your feed. If you're on the YouTube thing, go ahead and subscribe to Mike's YouTube channel. This thing will pop into your show feed every time we do one of these. I think we're on a 2-a-week cadence now, maybe. We'll see if that holds. You know,
Here's the thing with the Friday thing, though, man. I mean, we did Friday. The turnaround time is it's stale by Saturday, so I pop it up. Yeah. And then the shelf life on it is less than 12 hours. And then I can't retweet or promote it, because it's all old news. It's me talking about how, you know, Ohio State's going to blow out Notre Dame. And, you know, by the time that game's over, I can't retweet that stuff. So the second one in the week is a little tougher. We're still going to do it, but it's not going to be as viewed as this gorgeous piece of
this. Yeah,
jewelry.
This is going to be a Marconi Award winner already. I can just feel it, Mike. But anyway, if you listen to this and you liked it, again, do that subscribe stuff, and we're bringing more stuff as the season goes on. Again, we're only 1.5. I don't even count week zero. 1.5 weeks in, a lot of time to go. There's a lot of football to talk, and we'll do so right here on the Mike Farrell Sports Show. Again, make sure you're subscribing to the show. Make sure you're bookmarking MikeFarrellSports.com for all that content there. And Mike and I will figure out a way to talk to you sometime later on this week. If not, we apologize. Mike's got to go get his ear cleaned out. So bonus content. If you get on the Patreon, you'll get some video of Mike getting his ear cleaned out. You're going to love that video.
So disgusting.
I'm going to go vomit. I'll see you all later.
I'm a vomitous human being. Thank you.
You should. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.